podcast for heroes in the world of Overwatch. This is The Payload.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 42 of The Payload. We are an Overwatch podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com. Woo, it felt good to do that. I haven't done that in a few weeks. I needed to jazz it up a little bit. I'm John Horseman from Denver, Colorado. With me, of course, is the wonderful crew. It is some day in October. I don't have my show notes. I knew I forgot something.
It is the 6th of October.
And let's go ahead and jump into it first from the this obscure place in California. I forget.
The LA area.
It's Rosh. Hey, Rosh.
Hey, guys. It has been a while. I will not admit this outside of The Payload, but I have missed you guys. So if you ask me that in person, I will give you another answer. But here, I actually have missed you guys. I am glad that we are back with the podcast. I've been playing a lot of Overwatch between not having the podcast, though, which is awesome. I finally got Masters on my main account, so that was really cool. I'm super stoked to be here. We have a packed show for today, so I'm happy. I'm excited.
We definitely do. Let's jump over to beautiful Camarillo, California. It is Jimmy Bloxam. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, man, a lot has happened since the last time we were we did the payload. We went to TwitchCon. I went to Blizzard and did some Heroes content, and I pretty much haven't had any time to play games, so that's been my week and a half or two or whatever it's been. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and looking forward to a weekend off, though, to just sit and play some Overwatch. Ready to get back into competitive.
Yes, I think you and I both, man. It's been TwitchCon was amazing. Thanks to everyone reaching out and saying hi. We had a lot of fun, but we are happy, happy, happy to be back. We'll tell some TwitchCon stories in a bit, but let's go to Canada. Canada, say hello to none other than Kevin Avdestad. Hey, Kev.
Hey, John. It's good to have you back. It's been a long time since we all sat down and talked Overwatch. I missed you guys. I know that last week not having the show was weird, like a weird interruption to my routine of having something gaming Blizzard related to do every night of every week. So it was very confusing for my poor little mind trying to figure out why I wasn't busy on a Thursday night. But here we are, we're back. There is a ton to talk about because we took a week off, and you guys have some cool stories, I'm sure, to share from TwitchCon. So I vote we dive right in.
Let's do that. So let's talk about our weeks. Eeny, meeny, miny. Rosh, it's you. how was your week? Yeah, let's talk about your week in Overwatch.
Yeah, like I said earlier, I kind of touched on it. I finally started playing my main account, and if you haven't been watching my streams, up until about a week and a half ago, I have been playing Smurf accounts because I wanted to test a theory of the later you do your placements, the higher you place, because you don't get the people who are trying to do it right away, and you don't get, you know, stuck in this group of people that you shouldn't be with. So I decided to wait, and my advice is don't do that. It took me about 2.5 hours live on stream to finish placement matches 9 and 10. And it was quite a while. So
what?
And it was all recorded. I'm not exaggerating. It took like two and a half hours to finish the last two matches. So don't do that. I repeat, don't do that. Don't wait like I did. So I placed in plat on that day. Ended up climbing, and then at the end, I was like, oh, I'll just play till I lose. I ended up winning games and going on a winning streak for like 2.5 hours, so basically got it to Masters that night. So that was interesting, and that's kind of what I've been doing with my Overwatch week, is finally playing my main account. So it felt super good to get back and play with the Golden Mercy staff and then just be able to be on my account. So that's what my week has been like in Overwatch.
Nice. Well, sounds miserable. Completely
truly
utterly
awful. Yeah.
Miserable. But I'm sure Kevin will have a way to top that. Kev, how was your week in Overwatch?
Yeah, I also got my Smurf to Masters, you know, just had some spare time to kill. No, I have not played a ton of Overwatch. It's kind of a personal story, but a good friend of mine who I did an Overwatch tournament with not too long ago just passed away unexpectedly. So the game has had kind of a dark feel for me just the last little while. So I've kind of let it be. But there's been lots of cool stuff going on. Obviously, the game is in a really good place. We just got all these cool announcements coming out about things that we can look forward to in the coming weeks. So that's, I think, going to be a lot of fun. And I just finally started pricing out a TV to replace the one I was playing on that died. So I'll be able to get back to doing the console side as well, because that's definitely, I think, as time has gone on, that's become my preferred way to play Overwatch. Not because I think the game is better or worse on either platform. It's just I like kind of chilling on the couch and chatting with my buddies who I play games on Xbox with. But outside of that, I
Kevin
did get
just
some
said
other
console master race, by the way.
Yeah,
he said
in those exact
it's
words.
Better and
more fun.
He likes it.
It's superior in every way. I did get some cool Blizzard news. So for those of you who follow Well Met or keep up with me on Twitter, you would know that I, since the last time we did the payload, got to announce that I'm going to be doing some casting while I'm in California for BlizzCon. So I'm going to be doing the TESPA regionals for Hearthstone right after BlizzCon lets out. And I'm really, really, really looking forward to that.
It's really
also
cool.
To seeing all you guys at BlizzCon, right? You, the three of you, as well as any of the fans and listeners that are out there that are coming, we want to hang out with you guys. So get in touch and let us know how we can do that.
Can we just party really hard together? Just even for like
scared.
Even just for like an hour, just 1 hour of partying really hard.
Just sit and then to whatever.
Katie,
Josh, okay. Have you done BlizzCon before? I gotta know.
I have not done BlizzCon.
Oh no.
You have a rookie.
I have not done BlizzCon before. My first convention was actually TwitchCon this last weekend, and I didn't do any partying at TwitchCon. I just
getting you're like 12 and will not have done any of these things before.
Okay, well 12 is okay, fine.
Offensive,
12,
Kevin.
Still,
that's offensive.
So yeah, I'm pretty excited for BlizzCon though. I'm extremely excited. I don't know about partying super hard. But
there's no other option, really.
It's sort of I think it's mandatory. Like I think a choice per se.
Well then we'll do it.
Contract. Go.
Jimmy, to your point though, Katie cannot party with us because it was the most awkward thing. So quick side story. This is not Overwatch related. If you want to hear Overwatch, fast forward like 5 minutes. I apologize. But so we went to the Discord party. You were there. You were a little bit late. But there was this guy who walks up. And you know those guys who have like the shaved sides of their head and then they have like the curly top hair, like
yeah,
a combination of Lance Bass and Justin Timberlake in the NSYNC days. So homeboy walks up to Katie, grabs her by the arm and says, "Hey, let's go somewhere quiet and talk."
Oh, wow.
I'm like right there.
I'm watching this unfold, by the way.
So she's like, "No, I have a boyfriend." She goes, homeboy goes, "Do you really have a boyfriend?" Like, gosh. Oh yeah, you're right. I don't. Let's go. Like, that's ever going to happen.
So this is what happens when parties have completely open bars.
100% open bar, by the way. And so she goes, "No, I have a boyfriend who I love very much," which thank you, Katie. And he's like, "He must be so jealous." And I was like, "All right, homeboy, I'm stepping in." And so I step in and I'm not completely 100% like sober, but I'm sober enough to not be a jerk about everything. But I walk up and I get nice and close to his ear, nice and close, gonna whisper in. I'm like, "Hey, I'm hotter than you." And then Katie and I go away. So that was, the weirdest thing ever. And another guy offered to buy us a drink at an open bar, which was brilliant, by the way. And then he's like, can I kiss your girlfriend? And I was like, F no.
doesn't even ask Katie.
He at least, wow. I mean, at least he, I don't even know. I mean, it was nice of him to ask, but it's like, I can't control what my girlfriend does or kisses, but I would hope that would only be me. So anyways, those were two of the highlights of this entire story. All right, 5 minutes is up. My week in Overwatch was scarce, but I was at TwitchCon. So we were there. Jimmy, I thought our panel went over pretty well. How was your TwitchCon?
Yeah, I thought the panel went very well. And I don't know if I shared it publicly really, but privately I was very nervous about the panel and about people showing up.
You were so cute.
I was so happy to see the room get like to 80% filled. And Heather, my girlfriend, was telling me there was about 2,000 people watching online. So, I mean, that's pretty good for 12:30 on a Friday, getting people out of bed and to the convention. So I was really happy.
Out of bed at 12:30. Jimmy, you got some explaining to do.
during the convention. Come on.
It was the Discord party the night before. And it was pretty insane. Although, did you notice that once they turned my mic back on, the watcher count went down to about 1,200?
Mm-hmm. I did tweet to say that it was kind of annoying that your mic wasn't working on the stream. I'm sure it was fine in the room, but on the stream, everybody's like, what's wrong? Why can't we hear the...
Yeah, it was totally fine in the room.
I got a couple messages from people, and then I told them... Told the audio engineers, and I guess they fixed it, I think, halfway through.
They fixed it, but then they muted Jimmy for correcting him in front of 2,000 people. So, just kidding. It was so weird. It was a really cool experience, but I'm like, my phone's blowing up, like, your mic's not on. And I'm like, I know how to work a microphone. My mic is clearly on through the system, but for whatever reason, they didn't put it over to the stream, so... I was like, this is the podcast you, the engineer, should be in. We can talk about podcasting on Twitch because that's basically we are doing. Jimmy.
I think the highlight, though, was hearing our intro live from Katie. Like when I dropped you guys off at the airport, that was the last thing she said to me.
Yeah. So, Katie.
It was beautiful.
Anyone? We had a couple people who were like, oh, we know you guys from the payload. We're well met. And then she goes up and she goes, the podcast for heroes. And it's so perfect every time.
So it was amazing. I got to tell you that like that whole experience, I'm sure, is perfect because I remember how she behaved at BlizzCon last year. And like no one reps us better than Katie. Like Katie should be our mascot.
Yes.
No, yes. She is awesome.
If she listened to my shows, that would mean the world to her.
She knows better.
All right, we got to go to Overwatch and talk about the news. Let's talk Overwatch. I just hit something.
This week in Overwatch.
Oh, man. I mean, it feels like this 2 weeks in Overwatch, but it's not. It's just this week. And so before we get started, though, we do want to thank our MVPs, Adam B. and Tyler H., and I think we might have one more. We might not. I promise I'm going to look while we're doing the podcast. We'll find a way to thank you again on it. But it's been a crazy week. Have I told you guys that I rebuilt my whole studio? The whole studio is rebuilt.
You have mentioned it once or twice.
You showed me the layout.
It's the studio 2.0, and it's amazing. But Kevin will know, we had the previous shows... It was an art. It was like Michelangelo, showing up at the Sistine Chapel. Is that Michelangelo? Probably not. Da Vinci. Either way, showing up and you know, creating a masterpiece. And now it's all gone to you know where. So it's a little bit weird. There are things not quite done yet, but everything's been rebuilt and. I promise patrons I will get you going on that, but thank you to Adam B and Tyler H for sure, and mystery people who are new that we're going to thank separately as an added bonus to this. Find out more at patreon.com/payloadpodcast. Okay, we got maybe a special Halloween event going on. Maybe, we don't know for sure, but it's pretty confirmed. Kevin, what's going on with this spooktacular news? Oh,
spooktacular.
Oh,
indeed,
so
yeah. So some leaked images have appeared due to a timing error over on Xbox Live showcasing Halloween loot boxes for Overwatch. If you haven't been paying attention to the loot box situation or weren't keeping up with the game because you maybe took a break from it after release, this is very similar to what Blizzard did for the Summer Games during the Olympics. We had custom themed skins and content available from specialty loot boxes that were only available during that window of time. The information that we have thus far is all speculative. It's coming from image captures that have been uploaded to Reddit, stuff like that. But we are seeing a pretty strong correlation with what they did for Summer Games. The images look legitimate and believable. We're just at this point waiting for them to kick this system live, because if they're going to do it, it's likely only going to be a very short period of time that these would be available, maybe 3 to 4 weeks, which means that truthfully, we would actually be expecting them to go live with it as early as probably early next week, right?
Yeah, if they're going to do it, I can imagine that they would start early next week. I think I can't imagine that they'd only keep it out for 3 to 4 weeks. They might keep it maybe an extra week after Halloween passes and all of that, because what if you're out doing stuff and you don't have that much time to play? So maybe they'll keep it out a little longer. But yeah, it's not going to be very long. So keep your eyes and your ears open, because as soon as this goes live, you're going to want to start leveling up to get those loot boxes or start buying the loot boxes. Just keep your eyes peeled. It sounds like it'll come true, and it sounds like mm-hmm. it'll be probably pretty soon. Especially, you guys saw the picture with Mercy in the Halloween costume, and I can't remember the second character, but it was like, hey, happy Halloween, Winston.
Torbjorn.
Yeah, Torb. So, I mean, it kind of seems like they had this already thought out.
Yeah.
And if you look at the information, like they have published snippets of the text and stuff online that show that this is pretty well explained, right? They're saying that every loot box would have at least one Halloween skin, highlight, intro, yeah. emote, victory pose, player icon, yada, 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 over 100 Halloween items in total. And it does actually expressly say Halloween loot boxes are going to be available until November 1st at 4 p.m. So that's the information we have. Again, purely speculative at this point, but the images look pretty believable.
Okay. So real talk for a second. With the Olympics and the Olympics event, we had a little bit of a polarizing opinion in the community, because these items could not be crafted. They can only be earned based on purchasing or earning loot boxes. You can't buy craft them with in-game credits. Do you think that Blizzard will continue down that road of not being able to craft for credits for their limited time offers?
Yes. I think they're going to keep it the same, because they were pretty set in their ways during the Summer Game stuff. So I don't see this changing. If they're going to continue down that explanation of, oh, this is a yearly event, it's not expected for you to get every single item you want the first time through. So
challenge accepted, by the way.
I know.
I was reading on forums that people have their characters like stopped at like 201 or 101, so that for the first 20 levels they can just congregate
try to gain
box
the experience
after
exactly system. Yeah,
so that they could just get a bunch of boxes over and over again. I'm at 155, so I'm screwed, but I mean, hopefully, yeah. Oh, hopefully
if you don't get that Mercy skin, by the way, how devastated.
I'm uninstalling. I'm just going to uninstall the game if I can't
uninstall.
Get it.
In a couple weeks, we may be looking for a fourth co-host for the payload. But until then, yeah. So, I mean, you guys have said probably. So are you guys happy with this type of monetization policy for how Overwatch earns its money going forward? Because in Overwatch's defense, the only way that they make money right now, it's outside of selling the game, right? So which is going to have a diminishing return, right?
Yeah.
Is these loot boxes, is that fair? Is that okay? Does that take away from the experience?
I'm okay with it as long as it's spread out well enough. I'm a little worried if this is going to be a Halloween and potentially a Christmas event. I have no idea if there is going to be one, but if those are going to be back to back, I'm going to have to really kind of pick which boxes I'm really going to want to purchase. So I don't know. I think it's okay as long as it's spread out. Like, I think max four times a year doing something like this,
I'd be okay.
Yeah, so I'd be threshold. Okay. I guess, and I'd be okay buying the maximum amount of boxes four okay. times a year.
I think the revenue model is a big deal because they really do need all games at this point, right? Need sustainable revenue in order to justify ongoing support. You know, the quality of development and support we're getting for Overwatch is enormously good. So it makes sense. They need a revenue stream. The one thing I guess I would prefer, because I recognize it has to be a real money system. If you just do it using the in-game crafting system, you eventually get to a place like we have with lots of, John, you can probably speak to this in Hearthstone the same way I could, but I don't ever probably need to spend money in that game again if I don't want to. I pay to get, you know, the odd cosmetic, but I have so much gold and so much dust I would never have to bother ever again. In Overwatch, that is a place that people get to, right? They have everything unlocked. They have a whole bunch of duplicates that they've turned into dust. They could just go through and click on all the new stuff in the Halloween special and be done with it and never spend a dollar. I would really like to see down the road Blizzard offer the option for people to go in and spend money to buy specific unlocks. So maybe you buy your 20 or your 40 boxes or whatever, you unlock the stuff that you get from those boxes at a very steeply discounted rate, but you didn't get that one Mercy Halloween skin that you really wanted, right? And you can go in and say, all right, I'm going to spend $5 just on that skin and be able to, with real money only, buy specific individual cosmetic items. Because I think a lot of people would do that. I have no interest in playing the lottery or dumping, you know, to Jimmy's point, 40, $50 into the game 3-4 times a year. But if I could go in and spend $5 or $10 periodically and know that I'm going to get the things I want and not two or three sprays I don't care about, that would be an incentive for me to continue to spend the money and get the stuff I care about.
Something though that I'm thinking about with that is most people I find simply want like two or three skins and then they're done, right? Where there are, when you do this lottery system, you have to spend a lot more money to get those. I almost wish that they would just say, hey, tell you what, you can craft up to 1,000 credits worth on this expansion. So you can get that one that you didn't get or you didn't want, but everything else you got to buy. Now, I get that that really muddies and complicates things, and it's not very friendly to new people and people who don't know the rules. But there's always, like, again, Rosh is a Mercy main. If Rosh does not get that Mercy legendary skin, she's gonna flip her lid when it comes to that. She might uninstall till next year. She can't bear it. The weight of disappointment on her shoulders is overwhelming. So I definitely get that there needs to be, in my opinion, I feel like there should be a way to get those one, maybe two skins that we want, but at the same
even
time,
even just a system maybe that like prevented duplicates during seasonal events or something, I guess. I don't know. I'm thinking about, I have a friend, I won't name names because I feel bad for him, but Johan, my mystery friend who plays Overwatch, dropped almost 500. I have a friend, and he dropped almost $500 on loot boxes during the summer games to try and get everything. He
casual,
got all
Johan, get on my level. I might get 1,000 already.
He got all but one of the cosmetic items, and then he basically started tweeting at Blizzard being like, this is absurd. Like, I gave you all this money. I bought all the loot boxes under the sun. I'm missing one item. Is there some way that I can get it? Because I just want to have them all. And stuff like that makes me look at it and think, like, that system is preying on people like that, right? People who want to unlock everything, people who want to support the game. But ultimately, if the average player is spending nothing, and then a whole bunch of people who are trying really hard to enjoy the game and get everything are dropping hundreds or thousands of dollars, it's the same monetization model as like scummy freemium like phone games, right? And I don't love that when you think that probably their average spend per player, right, is actually quite low. And if they gave you the option to spend $5 or $10 on one or two of the things that you actually really wanted, there'd still be lots of people who would look at it and say, well, why would I spend $10 on a skin when I can get 11 boxes and maybe unlock a whole bunch of skins, right? Yeah. The value proposition would still be quite good for the loot boxes, but it wouldn't be so punitive to people who just want to pick up a couple of things. And it would probably actually increase, it would be a really good way for them to increase the total number of people who are spending money. Maybe not on loot boxes, but in terms of like, if maybe 10 to 20% of people in the game have spent any real money, maybe they can double that number.
Can we agree that this is probably going to be the way that Overwatch sustains itself long term? Is that a pretty fair assessment?
Yeah,
I think so, especially after the summer games.
Yeah,
unless they release like a hard Overwatch 2.
Like Overwatch 2 is the only other thing you can do, yeah. Right? So you have the choice. Do you think that Blizzard is going to... Because, I mean, okay, back up. So this is... It's tough, right? Because essentially what we are talking about here is, does Blizzard need to disable the crafting system in order to make enough money on Overwatch to make it not only sustainable but profitable? And knowing Blizzard, I feel like they have the word very underlined and bolded in front of profitable, because they are a very profitable company for what they do. Do you guys realistically think that the by withholding the crafting system, do you think that crafting system would be a big dent into their bottom line?
I think because, it would.
No.
Ooh.
I mean.
Ooh. Go. Fight.
Wait, sorry. So let me understand the question. You're talking about removing the crafting system.
Well, not removing the crafting system, but opening it up to these special events. Do you think that?
Yeah, I think that would hit their bottom line, definitely. And I think the crafting system is already there. It's already something players are familiar with. And they've already shown they're going to add content that you can dump the crafting credits into. Because as soon as the Eichenwald patch came out, I spent all my credits. I got the Reinhardt skin and I got the D.Va emote. So, I mean, they've shown that they're still going to, in Hearthstone terms, add to the classic packs, basically.
Nice.
Instead of just simply adding to these loot boxes that are going to be gated by either playing the game or dumping real money into it.
Rosh, why do you disagree?
It's hard for me because
you're so impressionable. I love it.
It's just, okay, looking at the amount of hours that I've played on Mercy, I have 250 hours on Mercy just on my main account. I'm not the average gamer. I game and I stream for a living, which means I'm able to dump a lot of extra time into gaming that other people may not. So I think that my perspective might be a little skewed. So I can also understand why it wouldn't be a huge hit to them if they introduced a crafting system, because not everybody has 154 loot boxes at their leisure because they play 90 hours a week. A lot of people don't have 10,000 extra credits sitting in their bank waiting for new expansions to come out. So now that Jimmy kind of said a little more about what his opinion is, I can see it. I don't really think it would take a huge hit. I think it would take some, but I don't think that it would knock off like a huge revenue of Blizzard for Overwatch, because, oh gosh, Kevin's getting ready with something. Yeah, because I just, my opinion is skewed. I have way too many hours in the game and I'm not the average player. So I probably have to side a little more with Jimmy now.
Ooh, Kevin, what's that something that you got?
It's It's gotta be my turn, right? Okay, so
show me what you've got.
Let's do this. Since people are like, this is one of the things that people miss, okay? We have access to this information. We know exactly what we're up against here. Blizzard reported record quarterly revenues, record first half of year revenues, record year-on-year growth, all in the last 6 months. Like, they're not hard up for cash. The model they're using is obviously working, but if you go and you look through the history of what they've done with most of their other games, the challenge has become that they've had to move over the course of the last decade or so away from a model that was primarily box copy sales, right? We sell Diablo 2, then the Diablo 2 expansion, then Warcraft 3, then the Warcraft 3 expansion, to something that has recurring revenue. And you can see it in their earning call reports. Their primary goal, right? They've got this nice little chart that says that they want to increase monthly active users, measure that against time spent as the primary metric, and use that engagement to, in their words, drive premium recurring in-game revenues, right? This is what they're trying to do. Every one of their games has microtransactions. They've got the subscription fees in World of Warcraft. They have all of these ways to generate ongoing money. This is the primary way they're going to make all of their games tick. I don't think any of it's going away or changing. I just think that the model they're using opens itself up to a certain level of risk that you get players who objectively don't enjoy the lottery process or get burned by it, and that turns them off of the microtransaction or the game itself. And that's the only reason I take issue with it, because when you compare it to Heroes of the Storm or Hearthstone, where they have an in-game currency system that allows you to unlock things consistently over time, even when new stuff is released, versus Overwatch, where everything is money exclusive and random, I can see that being really frustrating compared to, you know, like Jimmy and I, when we play Heroes of the Storm, we can go buy the skins we want for our individual characters we play. When John and I go play Hearthstone, we can go in and we can buy the packs we want and craft the cards that we're missing. There's always a way to get the thing you ultimately want, which feels very rewarding, versus the existing system, which says it's purely random and you can't even take advantage of your investment, whether that's time or money, into the game to get the thing that you're ultimately trying to achieve. That's going to feel really bad. And over time, I could see that being a problem. It was a great experiment for the summer games. I don't have an issue with it overall, but I think they could make more money and increase the metrics that they're using by giving people direct access to purchase. That's ultimately where I think this system has to land, because otherwise they have to circle back and do something with the crafting system. It's the only way.
So, I mean, okay. So Kevin, you're right. You make great points. Well, actually, let me say it in a Kevin way. You're not wrong. So you are right in the sense that these microtransactions and things are kind of set, can put off certain people. But this, for me, this is like this casino argument versus the movie argument. When I'm about to go to the casino, I'm not a high roller. None of us, I would be willing to bet none of us here go to a casino with more than $150, $200 in our pocket. And even then, I would say that that's pretty high, right? And I would also be willing to bet to say that most of us do not, basically, the way we justify the amount of money we sell is like, well, I'm going to spend 5 hours at the casino. That's, you know, 2-3 movie tickets. You know, like we start to break it out into real world terms for that. And when we go to the casino and we lose, gambling is a real thing. And many people do struggle with it. And essentially, the Hearthstone pack system, the loot box system, is gambling. Most of all, especially in these special event loot boxes, is the most supreme form of gambling that we have seen in Blizzard games so far. With Hearthstone, I can still craft any card that I want. I need the dust to do that, and the dust I need is from duplicate cards. But there is no other way for me to get my Halloween Mercy skin without hitting the lottery, right? And it's kind of the question of, as you know, let's say we're the Blizzard Casino. Do we make a system in which everybody gets out the same thing so that everybody, nobody's burned, nobody's elated. We're just boom, set on center. Or do we exploit the John Horstmans of the world who are going to spend $200 to get the Mercy skin that Rosh doesn't get just to rub it in her face? And I mean, obviously that's a really difficult thing that we don't have any of the access insight or insight to, but in the end, that's what it is, right? It's Blizzard has made a very conscious choice that the money that they make from these limited time offers in this gambling format is far more profitable than giving other players who otherwise would not participate in the system access to $5 to $10 worth. So that's, I mean, and I see Kevin, I see the grimace, and I understand you disagree with me.
No, I mean, I know that
tell
you're
me I'm
right,
not
and
wrong.
I know.
Tell me,
no,
I'm
I know that you're right. I'm frustrated by the fact that you're right. That's what it is. I ultimately think that if it was up to me, right, I listen to Blizzard's philosophy of being kind of player first and trying to build community, and think it would make a lot of sense to me that they would do something that would feel a little bit more rewarding, whether that was instituting a floor using the crafting system where you could pay to unlock the core things that you wanted after you've already dumped a ton of money. Because to have the crafting resources in game, you have to have hit a whole bunch of duplicates. You've already spent a whole bunch of money. I would love to see direct transactions for individual skins and cosmetics the way that Heroes of the Storm has. And I know for a fact that the reason they're not doing that is because the metrics will probably show that this makes them more money, right? Fundamentally, they're hitting a small group of people who do have an issue with completionism or gambling or whatever else for a lot of money. And their average spend per player probably maths out to 25 cents higher than if they made it so that you could buy individual cosmetics. And if $5.25 a player is obviously better than $5 a player, when they go to report that on investments, it's simple math, but it doesn't feel good. And that's the part that
totally
frustrates
agree.
Me is that I want to spend money on this game. I want to support it, but I fundamentally have a handful of things I'd like to get. And if I can't get those things, I'm not going to just throw money at the problem and hope I get lucky, because that's insane. If the skin is worth $10 to me, I'll pay $10 for it, but I won't spend $100 hoping I get that skin.
But it feels bad, but it feels better than paying for heroes and maps. So
true. And the game itself, like, it's all cosmetic. We're complaining about something that's fundamentally a non-issue,
right?
Because it's all cosmetic. Like, you don't need any of these things to play the game.
We gotta move on because we're half an hour into the show.
We could do this all day. Yeah.
We're half an hour into the show. We're not even disagreeing on anything. We're just hitting on points. But before we do, listeners, I need to confide in you in something. I am incredibly fallible. I'm very fallible. Kevin, did you know that I am fallible?
I was aware.
Okay. Well, I failed. So hold on. We're going to rewind.
This week in Overwatch.
So this week on the show, we do want to thank our MVPs. Oh my God, I am so bad at this.
We've got that
Tommy,
again?
Tommy H, Coral, Shadow, J.A., and Tyler H. That was a lot more than two people. I apologize. I am fallible. Thank you so much for your incredible support of the show. If you want to know more, head on over to patreon.com/payloadpodcast. Do you guys know what happens when we hit our next milestone? Shirts. That's right. Merch store.
Right.
That's
merch store. We got to update that, but we're going to do payload merchandise. It's going to be awesome. We're looking into options if there's something specific you guys would like to see. I know we talked about shirts, maybe doing tumblers or water bottles of some kind, or like glassware or something, as well as potentially mouse pads. So whatever you guys want, like, you need to tell us so we can make sure we get it added to the Blizz Pro store. email us the payload at blizzpro.com and let us know what you want to see in the merch store, and we'll get the Patreon updated really soon.
Yep. And thank you again for understanding that I am fallible. Hopefully those our MVPs listened through this far for me to go back and do that. So we got way more news to talk about. We are going to go so fast through this. I mean, you're going to think that you're listening at 1.5 speed and you're not. So we did have an Overwatch developer update that dropped yesterday, October 5th. So Jeff Kaplan, all hail Jeff Kaplan, went ahead and gave us another beautiful developer update. We're really excited to talk through the changes. So they basically talked about what's coming up for Overwatch. So we already have some changes live. So we've got Genji, Widowmaker, Spectator changes, which you need to listen to in depth, because there's some really cool stuff with the Spectator client coming up that I missed in the initial patch notes. He did a great job at breaking that down. They're working on a new hero that is in internal testing at Blizzard, Sombra. Wonder who that could be. What is a moment in crime at? Somebody check that out.
Sub 80, yeah. You don't think it's something else? Like, I have to assume that they've got more than just the one, because they've got to have something they want to drop at BlizzCon too.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, they said that they have some maps going, so that was the next thing, is they've got new maps in the works. So they have one map for a pre-existing game mode. They have already, they're having art made for that map. They have another map that is less far along, but is beyond the prototype stage for an existing game mode. And they have like four-ish maps that are in the concept prototype stage. So some pretty interesting stuff. Yeah,
they're
for
new game modes, though. Is the key
new
there.
Game modes are the last four.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping one of these maps for the pre-existing modes is for. I just had this up, Control, because we have the three in rotations, and I would like to see another locale for that. That would be really awesome. And
I would hate to see that.
Oh, you would? Oh,
I hate Control maps, but it would make sense that would be another map released.
Control maps, like the 2-point capture maps or King of the Hill?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Are we talking about the new word for King of the Hill under Control? Yeah,
sorry. Nepal, Ilios.
Okay, So no, I would hate if they added a new map for that.
You hate Control? King of the Hill?
I hate King of the Hill. I hate King of the Hill. I can't.
Just because Mercy's bad on those maps.
Which means I play a support exactly that I can't. That's exactly, but that means I can't play a support that I can carry on. And
I
that
saw
drives
you,
me nuts because I've got to be completely
butt.
Reliant.
I saw you kicking butt on Lucio today.
That was like a blue moon kind of thing. That. I can't carry as a Lucio on a King of the Hill, so I hate doing them. But to Jimmy's point, a lot of people like them, and there's only three of the maps in circulation, so it makes sense that they would add a new type of controller King of the Hill.
Yeah, I would hope that they would bring a new King of the Hill map, just because, A, it's my favorite and best game type. But B, I just like seeing the new stuff. And of all the maps, the 2-point capture maps are, for me, the least exciting. What is that? That's Anubis.
Anubis, Hanamura.
Volskaya, Hanamura. Like, come on.
Yeah, those are three.
Come on. So anyways, some good stuff here. Any big takeaways from the developer update?
I'm just happy that they're providing updates that are this kind of specific and this early on, I guess, in the development cycle of the game. I feel like him talking about this new hero and these new maps that are like super basic is really cool to hear. I mean, obviously no specific details, but knowing that this is where they are in the development cycle for Overwatch is, we've been kind of pounding this into people's minds since we started the podcast, that Blizzard does such a good job of supporting their games that this isn't a surprise, but it's nice how open they are being about it.
I do. So I hate gaming communities, and I love gaming communities, but I felt like half of the video was just Jeff Kaplan, like, setting expectations for everything he was about to say. He's like, I feel like I need to make a point here that we're really early on in the development process. And in the development process, things can change. So if something changes, please don't take what I'm about to say as the word of God, basically, because it could change. Here is what we're working on. And I feel like if he didn't say that in front of everything, because people do just freak out.
Yeah.
It would have been like a 7-minute video that ended up being a 14-minute video. But besides, I mean, I still appreciate the transparency, but I guess I feel like I am mature enough to understand that unless he says, we're coming out with this, if he's like, hey, we're working on this and we want this to happen, I would be okay. But I get it. I get it. Kevin, I see the eye roll. I get it.
I'm not eye rolling. I'm right there with you. The disclaimers annoy me because I don't think that someone should have to say this thing that isn't done yet isn't done yet. And it seems kind of redundant to have to say that before every future looking statement he makes. But I mean, it's sort of the reality of the world we live in. Enough people have been burned by early access and bad experience with projections on games that they're not even necessarily doing it because they have to worry about it internally, but they have to protect themselves from the expectations that exist from other game publishers and other fan communities, right? So it's a necessary evil. I get it. I think it's great, honestly. I know that we're very, I'm unfairly at times critical of the Hearthstone development team over on Well Met for how little of this kind of communication we get, forward-looking statements and insight into the development process, ideas of where the game is headed. I feel very comfortable knowing that the future of Overwatch is being actively managed because I don't have to even know necessarily that there's a new map or a new hero in development. That just from hearing him talk about ideas for game modes and ideas for things that they've tested and iterated on tell me that we're getting more content, we're getting future updates, they have a vision for where the game is headed, and we're party to that as part of the community. The balance changes even that he's announced, right? The stuff that was on the PTR, they're all subtle things like speeding up Riptire's animation. They're little things, but they're things that are massive quality of life improvements, and to be making tiny tweaks like that this late in the game's kind of initial life cycle to characters that have been in since the initial beta, even, that feels really good. The whole experience with Jeff is just so top shelf. Yes, I'm ticked off about him having the disclaimer literally everything he says, but I love that he says it at all.
Totally agree. And I love whoever, if the person who posted in Reddit today their new shrine for their favorite Overwatch hero, which is just
that is a picture of him.
It's a picture of Jeff with like he's like in the process of blinking. So he's saying something. So he's kind of like this. It is
looks the like most, just the tiniest bit stone.
Oh, it's so perfect. Thank you. If you email me with proof that that was yours, I will send you the first payload T-shirt. Yep, I said it. I will send you the first payload T-shirt, but you have to prove it was you. So, good luck doing that. We gotta keep on rolling here because we have so much to talk about. So let's talk a little bit about the esports news. So E-League has concluded. So E-League was amazing. It was done incredibly. I hope everybody here enjoyed it. But it just finished. That was the $300,000 US in US monies for those Canadians on the podcast. Team Misfits upsets Team Envious, and holy crap, that was pretty
insane.
Pretty amazing. We need to talk about this. So let's talk a little bit about the Overwatch Open. Rosh, let's just talk first, like initial high level impressions. What were your impressions of the finals of the Overwatch Open?
I wasn't expecting it to be as exciting as it was. Like, I kind of had low expectations for how good the games were going to be, how good the production value was going to be, just overall the experience, because when I watch an Overwatch game, I compare it to a League of Legends championship game, which is extremely hyped. The spectator view is amazing. The production value is insane, just because it's a solid a solid tournament. And so I was kind of sketched out. I was kind of worried a little bit, but it blew me away. It was really, really awesome. If you want to take about the games themselves, Misfits versus Envious, it was crazy, down to Temu on his Roadhog and Soon on his Reaper. And, what was his name? Haida? Was that his, the Ana? Was it?
The Ana.
It was the Ana, the sub. The one that they just signed. I'm pretty sure it was.
Oh my god!
Pretty sure it was Haydn.
Haydn, yes, you're totally right. Haydn.
I mean, subbing in a support player playing Ana for your team during this match was ridiculous, and it worked out for Misfits. They ended up signing. What was it, like 3 or 4 days ago? They ended up signing him, so it worked out, and his debut was amazing, and everything was great. But I mean, it was just fascinating. I had a lot of fun watching it. And I think it was over the TwitchCon preparations/weekend. When was the actual tournament?
It was on, I believe, Saturday. Friday?
Yeah.
Was it Friday night? Yeah, you're right. Because Katie and I stayed in and just watched that.
So, I mean, I was distracted the whole weekend, and I still had the energy to get into this game. I mean, it was phenomenal.
Yeah, it was really, really well done. So I failed to mention this in the beginning, but this was, the observer mode was broadcast on Twitch, but the full event was actually broadcast on TBS. For those of you who just Twitch, that's real person TV. You know, that money that you throw at Comcast every month for something that you use three channels of. Yeah. Well, this time you use TBS. So that was pretty cool to see. If you're watching the video, you can actually see some of some plays of the game, some stage setup. You can see the production value and quality, and they did a really amazing job for something with this, especially with like a studio of that size. It wasn't huge. I know that there were some people who went there, but they had room for maybe 150, 200 people total in that audience. So it wasn't like this huge studio, but let's talk about, so again, congratulations to Misfits. They played great. Very surprising. I don't think anybody expected them to upset Envious. So the fact that they did that is pretty amazing.
Especially let's talk with the sub.
Like, yeah.
Right.
I think that's kind of the big story. That was the sub craziest. Came in.
Yeah. Like, Soon got a lot of credit for being on his Reaper and flanking and getting a lot of kills. Like, he came up big in the last Li Zhong match that they played. But, I mean, hiding on that Ana as a sub, you've got to think he must have been racked with nerves. He must have been shaking up there like, man, if I screw this up, my esports career is done. Like, this is huge. And he proved that he earned a spot on that team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was really well done. We wanted to talk a little bit more about production quality and what we thought and what we thought about the casting, but we honestly just don't have time. But you should definitely go back. The finals, at least the finals. All right, hold on. We need to have real talk. If you are listening to the podcast right now, I need you to promise me something, that you will go back and watch the finals. It's not that long. You can watch it at 1.5 times speed on YouTube. They have E-League has the games uploaded individually, so you can watch each game in the match and watch those games just because you need to. It's great. This is outside of the esports arena, Atlantic Showdown. This is arguably the first completely huge, viable Overwatch tournament. And so it's really important that A, we watch it, and B, we support it. If we want it to happen, and if you want to get into Overwatch and A, see what amazing Overwatch is about, and B, do all of the things, and 16 Rockstar 1 or Rock 1 Star, do it now. I will ban you. Go ahead. Say you will do it. Say you won't do it again. I will ban you for the next 10 minutes.
I was watching the stream, and they showed the clip
from the seagull handshake. That missed
the seagull handshake, which apparently went on what, Jimmy Kimmel or something like that?
Jimmy Fallon,
I think. Yeah.
Oh, the rich man's Jimmy Kimmel. That's
so funny.
So yeah, it was. Yeah,
I mean, there were a lot of moments this whole tournament that there were just a lot of really cool moves. I mean, what kind of comes out to me is Seagulls play on Bastion on Nepal.
Yeah.
So it was a surprise, and they got the boost from Ana on him as well as he ulted. That was really cool. And then Kevin, I know you had brought this up, but I saw it as well. The Maywall on Temple of Anubis to just lift the team up onto that second level was just insane.
I mean, that highlight for me basically made the tournament, right? Obviously, mm-hmm. we saw some incredibly high-level play. We got to see a ton of really cool stuff come out. You know, Misfits upsetting Envious. Everything about it was awesome. And I know, John, we're moving on. But that kind of stuff really showcases what exactly Team Overwatch looks like. And it's a totally different game. It's a totally different game from what you or I are playing on ladder. And if we get some more spectating improvements and slightly better casting and all that kind of stuff to just keep improving how well this all comes together, it's going to be one of the most watchable games of all time at the rate things are going.
Absolutely. So, yeah, go ahead, watch it. It's on YouTube, E-League's YouTube. I'm assuming youtube.com/E-League, but whatever, it'll be in the show notes. All right, we got another thing to talk about, and then another thing to talk about, and then the big thing to talk about. So we got a lot more to do. So OGN has announced their Apex Season 1, and it starts tomorrow, October 7th, or today if you're listening on audio. It is featuring Doa and Monte Cristo, who are pretty well-known casters.
Yeah.
They were League of Legends, right? Didn't they do StarCraft as well, Kev? Did Doa and Monte Cristo do...
Doa did, at least.
I know Doa did. I'm more familiar with Doa because he did stuff with Hearthstone.
Hearthstone as well,
when it was first coming out as well. And they're going to be casting this. It's $177,000. It's a league running through October through December. And the NA invites, or not the NA invites, but the Western invites include Envious, Rogue, NRG, and Reunited. So those are going to be the Western invites there. So it's pretty sweet. You should definitely check it out. I don't have a link for a stream yet. I don't know where that's going to be. I haven't been able to find it anywhere. But I'm sure...
I guess twitch.tv/OGN.
Probably. The other one we have is the Asia Pacific Premier main event is going on from October 6th through the 16th. It's going to have Energy, Rogue, and some of the biggest name in the Asian scene. So if you want to see the Asia Pacific teams and what that scene is like, you definitely want to check this out. It's a $250,000 prize pool. So just between these two events alone, we're closing up on $500,000, which is pretty insane. It's like, what, $430,000 or whatever, 27, whatever. So that's pretty cool. And you can watch that on twitch.tv/bananaculture. So, yeah. Wow. Did we get through that all? We did?
Just barely.
Cool. All right. Well, we're going to get into... We're going to get into our big segment of the week, our strategy segment. We're moving so fast, but so slow, because we had to talk about Halloween loot boxes. Here we go.
Faster than sight. So predictable.
Woo! All right, so we did want to bring you a strategy segment this week because we like to talk about strategy in Overwatch. So we've got a strategy segment. Let's talk about our favorite topic, the payload. So last week we talked about control maps. This week, the payload. This is probably one of the game types that is most iconic to Overwatch. Arguably, you could say that this is what the game type that Overwatch will be known for, even if it's not the best or most balanced or most play game type. It's one of very few games that has been able to implement it well. So let's talk a little bit about payload strategy. So we would not be the Face Hunter podcast that we are if we didn't talk about attack first. So we're going to do that. So attacking. So attacking on the payload, whether you're on Dorado or that place in London or Route 66, King's Row. Whether you're on, there are some fundamental truths of escorting the payload, and we want to bring those to light. So, Rosh, let's start with you. What are some, like, key, before the game even starts, you're on attack, you're in the spawn room, what are you thinking about to escort, well, to capture the first point and escort the payload?
Well, I'll use Route 66. I know that's not capturing the point and then escorting the payload, but it's escorting the payload to the point. I'll use Route 66 as kind of an example because it's kind of a good segue into what you're thinking before the match even starts. You want to think about what map you're playing, okay? So Route 66, basically in competitive, you don't set up, the defending team is not in front of that little bend that you first walk out to if you're the attacking team. So they're set up on top of the gas station around that bend. So you really already want to think about, okay, they're probably going to have a Reinhardt defending everybody up there. They're probably going to have some hit scans. There might be a Hanzo or a Widow with the changes. You really want to think about that kind of stuff. So what you want, at least for the first part, what I've really noticed has worked well is getting a character that can get past the curve really fast so you can't get knocked off by a hit scan character. So like a Genji, a Winston, even a Pharah, if you want to kind of test the waters, see how much of a sharpshooter their McCree is, because the Pharah, what is it, the E, that you shoot the rocket and then it pushes everybody back. It's such a great engage because if the defending team is sitting on top of the roof of the gas station, it's really hard to break through there unless you have a Genji who can shift up there and scatter everybody, or a Winston who can get up there and knock everybody back. And like I said, a Pharah who can, you know, disrupt everything, because that's how you get your in on that kind of map. You want to disrupt the line that the defense has set up and you want to push with that. So yeah, right off the bat, you really, really, really want to think about the kind of map that you're playing. The same can be said for Eichenwald. You want characters that are great flankers, because disrupting the line for the first part is huge because it allows you to snowball past that. So with that, you definitely want a character like Bastion. Ha, you never want a Bastion. That was a joke. I will literally never pick Bastion. But that's what you.
I was
really,
taking
really
notes. Now I have
about.
To scribble things out. Thanks a lot, Rash.
That's probably my biggest piece of advice for attacking is already thinking ahead, thinking about what you need to do to scatter the front line of that defense. Because as soon as that's the hardest part of the map, essentially, is getting through that first part. Because then you can either snowball, and you've gotten more time because you've gotten the checkpoint, in which case it's super easy for you to finish the map. Or you come to another point where you don't have that first initial bend or the gates on King's Row to go through. So it's a lot easier to attack another wall. So just right off the bat, you want to get through that as fast as possible and just don't give the enemy time to really think about what to do. I think that's my biggest piece of advice.
All right. Totally fair. Kevin, what would you add?
Well, I mean, I think Rosh has hit on a lot of the high points for things like disrupting defense. I would say that a big thing that a lot of people at a lower skill level, at least, are maybe not aware of or forget about is when you're attacking, you have very different objectives and your character selection is frankly narrower. You're not going to get value out of a lot of the truly defensive characters. There's a lot of positional issues that you have to take into consideration, because the defensive team can be fairly spread out, but the team that's actually trying to move the payload needs to play much closer together. With the exception of your flankers, you really want your core group to stay tight together. And at all times, you do need someone to stay with the payload. This is something that I see a lot of people forget about. They get too hasty in trying to get some, secure a couple of kills and create that advantage and window of time where they can push, and then they don't actually take advantage of it and push the payload. So you need to make sure that strategically, once you've identified which kinds of characters you're going to use and how you're going to counter the defensive positioning of the other team, that you also know who are you grouping on when you have a man advantage and you knock somebody out. How are you coordinating your alts to give yourself space to continue to push, and who's going back to the payload? Because you're going to need somebody to make sure that, that's an assignment, honestly, that people should do, even in regular old like solo queue pubby games for fun. Know who's going to go do that, because otherwise you end up in an awkward situation where maybe you're playing support, but you see the payload isn't being moved. So you run over to try to help do that, and you run out of range for your Lucio to be healing your tank. Like, there's just all these little things about payload strategy itself. And it all, honestly, for me, comes back to positioning. You're not worried about trying to get into a particular location the way we talked about on Control. You're really very much focused on staying with your team and executing as a group. And that changes the calculus a little bit. So I would say that's the fundamentals, is know which kinds of characters make sense. You're not going to use a lot of the defensive characters on offense, especially on payload for escort purposes. And you're going to need to make sure that you actually coordinate to take advantage of the space you create when you secure major kills to actually move the payload forward.
Fair enough. Jimmy, I'm going to pass the next one to you then. So are there any heroes in particular that you feel do exceptionally well on offense? Ones that almost feel like auto pick?
Yeah, I would say Reinhardt and Lucio at the very least are pretty much mandatory. Lucio, you can kind of swap in and out, I feel like, but Reinhardt is definitely, I think, required for attack on payload maps like this, but that's basically, I would say, the only one that's completely required, because there's no other hero that really fills that role of having that shield in front of your team to be able to push the payload. Zarya might be considered maybe a potentially required hero as well, but it really depends on what they're running against you. And I'll argue for pub games. I'll argue against Rosh. A Bastion on the payload is one of the most obnoxious things on the planet.
That is not the official position of the Payload Podcast. We do not endorse the statements of Mr. Bloxham.
No, hey, Seagull, go for it. Dude, if you're Seagull, go for it. But I'm just going to leave that comment there.
Yeah, no, it's bad.
So
no, I get it, because sometimes it can be good, especially if you're going against pubs and the other team just can't handle Bastion. It can work out for you. The big tip is, if it doesn't work out in the first 10-15 seconds and you're not immediately rolling with it, dude, just swap. Stop trying to make it work, because then the surprise factor's gone. You no longer have that, oh my god, they have a Bastion, we need to get the heck off of this character. Like, it's gone. So please swap if you're going to do that.
And we've circled back to that advice every time we have this conversation about strategy for every game type. Swapping is important. Like, yes, we can give you an idea of how you should load out your team to start when you walk out the door. Reinhardt's a great tank. Some kind of hit scan is probably a good idea in case they have a Pharah, or you just need to pick somebody off at range. You probably want a healer that can sustain multiple targets, like a Lucio. Like, we can do all these things, but as soon as you see the other team's composition, especially early on in the game, it's worthwhile to immediately evaluate swaps. Everybody gets so hung up on trying to charge their ults and value their ults that they forget to swap. And we said exactly this when we talked about Control. Don't overvalue ults, because hard countering a character is better than using an ult that isn't going to decide the game.
Yeah, especially, I mean, we, as a fairly, I wouldn't call us a competitive podcast. We're definitely not the most new player friendly Overwatch podcast, but we're definitely not the most competitive either. It's at lower levels, like where I play, specifically, you know, where people haven't quite figured out turrets yet. Yeah, Bastion's great on offense because people haven't figured out turrets yet. But once you get to that high gold, platinum, diamond range, yeah, you really can't do much with Bastion. So we'll do our best to kind of assess all different lines of play. And the same thing at the highest levels of play, Rosh, aren't teams still running the 3-tank, 3-support combo?
Oh, yeah. Well, not so much 3-support, but definitely three tanks. I haven't seen a three support three tank since it was on the PTR and people were trying to combat or trying to test it out. I've mainly seen
three tanks. Floater now, right? 3-2-1 where they have
one is like normally it's a hit scan. It's like the carry of the game where he's picking off the healers and the flankers, and your tanks are in the front line, and then you have two support. And I see a lot of Mercy and Ana and a lot of Lucio Anas. I don't really see a lot of Zenyatta play unless it's a King of the Hill, but even then I still see a lot of Anas. But it's definitely very favorable in the triple tank, which means you see a lot of Reaper. So it's also normally it starts out with a hit scan, but if the other team is running three tanks, they switch to Reaper, vice versa, and it kind of just goes from there. But it's still definitely a thing to run triple tank.
Yeah, that Ana Reinhardt combo can be scary. Clear out that back line real quick.
We were going back to Overwatch Open. Nevix played that flex slot for Misfits, and you could argue that he was the difference maker and would allow them to kind of overcome the Envious. So you're right. It's more of that 3-2-1 piece at this point. But it's really interesting. The Overwatch meta, especially with Ana, who when we first came out, the community in general really, really kind of shunned her because her mobility was so bad. Little did we know how powerful that her ultimate would be. It's kind of insane, and usually you try to like that first bit, you try to get your, you know, Ana's ultimate goes up so fast that you throw it on that Reinhardt to clear the way pretty significantly, and hopefully by then your Reaper has his ultimate, and then you nano boost a Reaper, and then, you know, that's just kind of it snowballs from that. But that's not necessarily payload strategy, that's just my comment going back to payload strategy here. What would you, any of you, I'm making this an open question, what would you say is one of the biggest mistakes people make when on offense, besides not switching their heroes soon enough? Because that's always a mistake. Everybody always makes that mistake. It doesn't matter offense, defense, payload, control, Koth, doesn't matter.
Not taking advantage of numbers game that you're winning. If you get a couple of members of their team down, you better be on that payload pushing as much advantage as you can. I mean, obviously I'm much lower than most people here, but everyone here, really, frankly. But yeah, I see that a lot just at the level I'm at. It's just people get a couple of kills and they're kind of just hanging out still up front there. I'm like, why are you there? Yeah, you'll get maybe a kill or two, but you're slowing down our payload push. I think it's what, three people on the payload to hit the max speed on it?
Maximize the speed, yeah. I agree with Jimmy that from a Mercy standpoint, because I'm in the back and I'm always watching the kill cam. I'm constantly, and even if we get a pick, it's huge. You immediately have the momentum just no matter who you picked. I mean, any character that you pick in the situation is good. They're either down a support, a DPS, or a tank. That's huge. But I think that my biggest mistake that I think a lot of people do is they underestimate the defensive heroes for attack. And I know a lot of people hate that, and that's something that they're trying to fix. But like a Hanzo on attack is kind of shamed upon, and a Mei on attack is kind of shamed upon. And I think that you can do some massive damage, especially with Mei, because her ult is just so big that if you get your ult as a Mei and you can play her well, you take everybody off of that payload. Or if they don't get off the payload, you can wipe the team, and it's so easy. And so I think that a lot of people underestimate the defensive heroes. They're just in such a good position right now with their abilities and their ults that I think someone rolls a Mei on offense and people instantly shun them, and that might be what wins you the game. I've done it myself where I've been like, oh, we have a Mei on offense. Like, what are we doing? But it's the Mei ult that stops their defensive line and lets us push in. And another thing is shutting Hanzos on attack. I will be the first person to tell you that I love a good offensive Hanzo. It is my favorite person in the world to duo with, and he can do so much damage that just doubting those two heroes in specific, I think, is a huge thing that people really need to take a step back and realize, oh, these characters can do some real damage to the team. We should probably accept that and run it.
And even on Gibraltar for Overwatch Open, Envious and Misfits, they both ran Mei. So, you know, you can get
it's
that
good.
Could be a really powerful.
Yeah.
It's the name of the game right now, especially in competitive Overwatch, is ult management. It's getting the advantage in your ultimates and keeping that advantage wherever you can. And when you're behind, trying to make your opponents waste ults. It kind of feels that way. And that's one of the biggest things that I feel like I see as a big mistake on attack is not being smart about the ults that you've seen and the ults that you have and how you can make that push even when you're behind. So that would be something that I would add to that is make sure you know, be the guy who lets people know, or gal, that lets people know when they have their ultimate or when they don't have their ultimate, because that's really important, especially for making a big push or making a comeback when you're behind.
If you're not hitting tab like every 10 to 15 seconds, that's something that you should definitely change. You should
My
be
Xbox
super
controller doesn't have tab.
Yeah, I guess from a controller perspective, what button is it on the controller that opens it up?
D-pad down.
All right, so D-pad down. You just make it a habit. Make it a habit. It will help everything knowing where your ults are and who has ult and everything like that. So it's definitely good.
Let's jump to Kev.
Exactly. I'll throw my one thing in because nobody else said it, and then we'll move on. Don't overcommit to flanking. I know there's a real temptation on offense to grab flankers. It feels really good because you can sneak up on the Hanzo, Widow, Bastion, some of the more immobile characters. You feel like you get an advantage by sneaking around the outside and trying to pull that stuff off. Doesn't always work out that way. And quite often, people really want to do that, especially competitive. And if you're going to do it, you need one person who's doing it and doing it well. When you end up with a Tracer and a Genji and a Reaper on one team, you've vastly overcommitted to how you're trying to get that advantage. And it ultimately sets your team back because now you don't have the core squad staying with the payload and playing to the objective. Flanking is a great strategy in support of the primary strategy, but you really, really, really have to make sure that the core group stays tight. Right, Jimmy?
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh!
Sorry, I had to work that in there.
No.
We got to stay tight in here, ladies and gentlemen. It happened. And cut.
Spam the emotes.
Sorry, chat's going nuts. Kevin's saying stay tight. Rasha's laughing. There's so much going on. We have to go on to our defense. We have to. We just don't have time, Kevin. We don't have time. So let's talk about some fundamental defensive strategy. Rosh, I'm going to go ahead and make an observation about what you said earlier and say that in defense, one of your biggest advantage is positioning. Would I be correct?
Yeah, definitely.
And high ground is definitely king. Would I be correct?
Huge.
And that's all I have.
You can just keep agreeing with everything that I said.
That's all. And console players rule.
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
I'm in a mutation.
All right. Awesome. Thank you for doing that. So what other, Jimmy, I'm going to pass it to you again. What other strategies are really important on defense besides staying tight, staying high, having good positions?
Just be willing to be flexible and counter what the offense is throwing at you, and really, like Kevin was saying, staying tight, making sure you're all together, not getting taken out by these flanking heroes and stuff is so key because of how the maps are set up for these. Defense has just this giant walk back, so I feel like the deaths are even more profound on the defensive side, so you have to be really careful in that respect and just keep an eye on what they're running and try to counter it best you can.
Fair. Kev, what do you think?
I mean, I think you guys hit the real high notes. For me, it's all positioning on defense. Like, character selection is important, making sure that you've got high ground advantage, a sniper in play. The more mobile supports in particular really shine on defense. Mercy, I feel like, is a way better defensive support in this kind of situation because you can get back and forth between your high ground snipers and positioned players.
And that's typically the only time we see Symmetra as well, right? As on
true,
those long
yeah.
Symmetra maps
really good
on defense, that first piece.
Yeah, I mean, I think like Kingsrow was a great example of that, where if you've got someone who's comfortable playing Symmetra until they get the point and then swapping, that's a real smart play on a map like that. In general, though, it's all positioning. Like, know where the good vantage points are, know where to take fights. I can't remember what's the map. Is it Gibraltar where everybody tries to fight way too far forward? And the first, honestly, the first
competitive
checkpoint
people,
is basically,
yeah, they removed
it's not even
it,
worth trying.
Right? Didn't they remove it or are removing it?
Yeah, the first checkpoint was under the bridge.
It was under the bridge.
They
just took
it
out.
And
they
removed it. Yeah. So now your positioning really wants to be on top of the bridge and nowhere past that, because then, yeah, you just give it up for free. You have such a long walk that since that's no longer a checkpoint, you're still in the same spot as spawning on the defense team. And you've got a long haul back. So, yeah, positioning is definitely huge. And the one thing I think that you definitely need is obviously your supports, your tanks. I think Zarya is huge because you typically want a hit scan for a defense character, just to kind of watch the flankers that are trying to disrupt your line. And if you have a hit scan watching the flank, Zarya is really clutch for being able to shield it so that your hit scan has enough time to roll back, like Route 66, for example, hiding in the tunnel around the bend while the rest of the team is on top of the building. The Zarya can shield him, giving him enough time to get back into LOS for the healer. I can shift to him, heal him. He's taking care of the flanker. He hasn't died. We can reset back into position, which is also another huge thing, guys. If you are on defense and you wipe the team, reset. Do not let that build into some kind of cockiness to where you think that you can run rampant at the beginning of the map. Just take out the team, they're going to reset, you take your time to reset so that you now have that line again, you're not disrupted, and just kind of restart the match over and over again as many times as you can. So that's going to give you the best advantage.
It's also worth noting, too, because this is a mistake I see a lot on defense. You don't have static positions either. Like, when Raj says reset, she means, like, get everybody back together, reformulate so that everybody's lined up to defend again. But that doesn't mean that your Widowmaker goes back to the exact same place that she was standing before.
Yeah.
There's a lot of defensive players who will do that. They know where the choke points are. They know how to hold on Anubis B, or like they know the strategies for certain maps, right? But they don't necessarily, especially for payload in particular, because the objective is moving all the time, you can't just go back to that exact same point of high ground, that exact same overlook, and keep trying to play the same game, because the attackers know where those points
are
too.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you're not using the time where the other team is dead to manipulate your positioning and surprise them from a new direction, that's a mistake. That's a way that you're allowing the offensive team to strategize against you, and you're not doing anything to strategize back against them.
I think that's a good point. And I do need to pause because I can feel over our podcast listeners or people listening to this show on their podcast feeds who are like, hey, does this all really work? Is this all really I need to know? Well, I need to tell you for a second. Fernando in Twitch chat has said that just when I was trying to, that's a different one. I just won a match now and I was on defense, literally following your instructions. So play this podcast.
That's awesome.
Play this podcast so while you're awesome. Playing on defense and you will win games and you're welcome. Yeah. Oh God, the chat is going nuts. We got to stop. Let's hit on a last couple bits of things. What are some really, 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 really important heroes on defense? So, Reinhardt is popular.
Reinhardt's a good one. I also really, really like Zarya.
Zarya, mm-hmm. Love Zarya.
Zarya's super good.
Lucio is pretty important for his speed boost. Even though it got nerfed a little bit, it's still very strong. That speed boost is still really important.
I think that Lucy is better on offense, but yeah, I have to agree. Normally, most of the time, I'll start off on Mercy, and if I die on Mercy, I'll swap to a Lucio just to speed boost myself back in any other stragglers. Even if I haven't used my res, if I just get picked off immediately, I'll swap to Lucio. Another good character is Mei. Like, she's super powerful right now. You can see in the Misfits and Envious game, they chose her on attack and offense, so I think that's clear enough that Mei is really freaking good for zoning off players into the exact corner that you want, and her ult is just insane. It's just too nutty not to use.
Something that we've been seeing more, I would say, as well as Roadhog. Taimu was running Roadhog on defense on most payload maps. Now, again, it's Taimu, so, you know. It's
I've been seeing
like
a lot of Winstons.
Winston is like an altogether just really powerful healer or hero when you know how to play him, because he is pretty devastating either way. Reaper is actually really solid, especially with an Ana, because on the payload it's natural to cluster around the payload, and that is what that ultimate is designed to shun and punish, is clustering. So Reaper can be pretty good. If you can be in a place where there is an advantage in height, typically he comes in from the top and, you know, lands
and
on top of people.
What you might want to do is, instead of just instant locking a Reaper, unless you know for a fact that the other team, like, you just played the same people and you know they're going to run like a triple tank comp, is maybe start off on like a McCree. And then if they have the triple tanks, then switching. Because if they don't, Reaper's still really good in the right hands, but I would argue that McCree is just better because of his hit scan. So it's just, it's kind of, you kind of got to play it by, okay, have I played these people before? What kind of map is it? If it's a King of the Hill, a Reaper is always really nice, and I'll argue that a Reaper is better than a McCree on a capture point. But on a payload, I would argue that a McCree is a better first pick, and then switching to the Reaper if need be.
Yeah, totally Reaper agree. Reaper, in addition to Death Blossom, is your tank buster. I would also say that in general, depending on skill level, it's very, very valuable to have AoE damage characters on defense, because you know that the team that's pushing the payload is likely going to be grouped up. We just finished discussing that. Junkrat, super, super powerful. Pharah, actually one of my favorite defensive characters, because you know that you're going to be able to just take those pot shots, keep suppressive fire over some of the major choke points, and being able to damage multiple characters at once is one of the best ways that you can punish players that have to clump up on payloads.
Absolutely. One other one, we haven't said this hero's name the whole time. I actually Symmetra. Like, no, not, we did talk oh, about, okay. we talked about Symmetra, Zenyatta. So Zenyatta can be at, I wouldn't say at the most competitive levels, but especially at lower levels, because of his ability to really chunk down that Reinhardt shield. If you're having trouble because they're just standing behind that Reinhardt shield, just alt firing right through each. One of those is almost like, I believe it's like 600 or so pieces or health off of that Reinhardt shield for a full alt fire. So it can be really good, but I just have a Zenyatta bias. I love Zenyatta so much. Well, but it's at the lower skill levels.
One of the lesser pick between Zenyatta and Symmetra. I think they're both on the lower totem pole of the support heroes that are being picked. Of course,
strictly on mobility.
Yeah, exactly. Strictly on mobility. If their other team has a Genji or a Tracer and your team is not on top of it, it is so frustrating to play Zenyatta. But Zenyatta can work really, really well. I have a friend who made Zenyatta work extremely well, and they climbed like 15, 18 skill ranks because they chose the Zenyatta. And because of the kind of personality that they were really into communication with their team, and teams are in the voice comms. And, okay, this has my Discord orb. Let's focus this. Okay, Pharah's in the orb or in the air with my Discord. Let's go here. Okay, Roadhog is the Discord. Let's kill him now. Rein has it. Destroy his shield. Let's tear him up. If you're that kind of person, you can make Zenyatta work extremely well. Unfortunately, like John, Kevin have said, it's kind of on the lower pole of the supports being picked just because of the mobility, but you can still make it work if you're that kind of person.
And I think a last point to make here, and we'll close out the show, is basically, especially if you're not into like the Diamond Master, Grandmaster type ranks, if you are really good at a hero, generally being really good at a hero is better than having a perfect composition. Yeah. As you get higher up, you can't afford to just be one hero.
Mercy main?
Yeah, a mercy. Well, I mean, even look,
hey.
Rosh is.
Hey, I'm making it worse.
Rosh makes it worse.
I got Jimmy. I got Rosh.
Lucia,
I
just gotta get you Josh. Can't get me. I'm untouchable because I can mute you. So you can't do that. So, anyways, there's that aspect of, you know, how do you find a way to make different characters and different heroes your strengths so that as you climb, you're not bound by specific heroes. And that's always something to keep in mind, but especially I would say up until 3,000 is where I would start thinking about it. And I would say 3,500 is where it starts to be like mandatory to where you need to know multiple heroes. So, that's it. We cut it a little bit short, but we wanted to give you a little bit of strategy.
It like an hour and a half.
I know. But we have to play the obligatory sounder.
Time is money, friends, and we're almost flat broke.
Yeah, that's right. We got to get out of here. This is fun. I missed this. I missed you guys. And Kevin.
Missed you guys.
See, I can do that. I can do it pretty easy. I can do it all day. So let's go ahead. No emails, really, but we do want to hear more from you and your emails.
Especially this upcoming week, guys, because we're going to get into BlizzCon predictions. So if there's stuff you want to hear about while we're getting into that conversation, email us. Let us know. thepayload@blizzpro.com. We want to hit all of your questions, all of your suggestions, even just hear your predictions.
Yeah, weigh I'd love in, to hear you know. Guys' predictions about Overwatch. This BlizzCon, because it's kind of really open. There's a whole lot of stuff that could be happening here. So, yeah.
I'm really, really freaking excited. But we've got a ton of new patrons and stuff to talk about. But before we do, let's thank our MVPs. I need to do this. I have it up on the other screen. Oh, I suck. Tommy H, Coral, Shadow, J.A., and Tyler H. Thank you so much for supporting the show. If you want to find out more, head on over to patreon.com/payload podcast. What else we have going on in patron land, Kev?
We have a ton of stuff. So our Patreon blew up like crazy this last little while. You guys have shown us an enormous amount of love. We cannot thank you enough for this. We're actually closing in on our next milestone. We haven't updated it on the Patreon itself yet, but we did announce earlier on the show at the $200 mark, we're going to open up a Payload merchandise store. We've got some cool stuff. When we get to that point, we'll be able to add merchandise that we can do as giveaways and contests on the show. We've had a lot of fun doing that over on Well Met, and we just would love to be able to send you guys prizes and have Payload logoed stuff out there for the people who really love the show. So we're getting very close. Anybody who wants to get in on that can head over to patreon.com/payload podcast. Check out the rewards. If there's stuff that you want that you're not seeing there, hit us up on Twitter or by email and let us know. And this week, new to the Payload family are Ty N, Tommy H, Matt B, and our good friends over at the High Noon podcast. So we're very thankful to have all those people on board, brand new since we last recorded. And hopefully, by the time we're getting close to BlizzCon, we'll be able to announce the opening of that merchandise store.
Absolutely. So I need to say one thing. Our friends at High Noon Podcast, we touch on competitive, and I think that we watch it very well. Those guys live, eat, and breathe competitive. So if you want to check out the really deep dive on the competitive scene in Overwatch, I highly recommend their podcast. And I met the Blevins at TwitchCon. He was a really cool dude. He even came to our panel. So shout out
to... Yeah, thank you guys for that.
The Blevins for doing that. iTunes reviews. Jimmy, what do we got going on there?
Yeah, from the land of Kevin, we have Ballistic 006, and from the USA, we have Brett Perry and Lamataf.
Kevin, I think Jimmy wins for butchering iTunes names.
Best Butcher and a
over JR. I think JR needs to step up his iTunes butchering game because that was pretty dang awful. What was the name of that last one?
Lemitaph.
Lemitaph. I love it.
Woo. No, but thank you for your 5-star iTunes reviews. It really, really helps us in growing our audience and expanding the Payload Podcast to more listeners. So thank you guys so much.
Yes, thank you. Let's go to shout outs for the week. Rosh, any shout outs, things you're up to? What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, this last weekend at TwitchCon made me really appreciative of all of you guys and all of the viewers and all of my stream viewers. It's amazing how much of a difference you guys make on my day-to-day life, just being there, supporting me, talking to me on Twitter, talking to me on Twitch DMs, you know, telling me about your day, letting me know how work went, about upcoming projects. I wouldn't do any of this without you. So it's just insane the amount of support that I've gotten since I started streaming, 4 months ago. So it's been insane. I wouldn't have been able to meet you guys if it wasn't for Fade to Karma. So definitely check them out. They are the gaming organization I stream for. You can find out more information about the organization and what we kind of dabble in different games and stuff like that at fadetokarma.com. That's fade, the number 2, karma.com. And then last but not least, our sponsors. We have NutsBet. You can sponsor on Hearthstone players in real life competitions. So it's a really cool way to, you know, feel like you're part of the gambling community, but also being part of the gamers community. So I think that's pretty neat. And then goodgaming.com, they do a lot of Hearthstone tournaments and they dabble in some Overwatch tournaments, which are normally free to enter with big cash payouts. So super supportive, all of those guys. And I appreciate everything that they do for me. And I appreciate everything that you guys do for me. And I appreciate that everything the viewers do. So
you're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We're happy to do it. Shoutouts, Kevin.
All right. Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, I will be doing the TESPA regional playoffs for Hearthstone right after BlizzCon. I would love to have some people come check that out. If you're a Hearthstone fan or a Kevin fan, I don't think that's a thing, but if there are any, I will post all the information on how to check out that stream. And it's going to be right after BlizzCon. So BlizzCon is now in less than a month. Holy wow. And we do really, really want to meet up with you guys. We're trying to sort out maybe a way to do like a BlizzPro get together on Friday at some point. We're just going to try and get as many people as we can together. But in addition to that, John and I are presenting on panels at Calm Before the Storm. We're going to be at all these different parties and events. And
are you getting me in this year?
Floor.
Are you getting me in again this year?
Oh yeah,
to the parties.
Absolutely.
Okay,
yes.
Cool. I'm holding you to that because I'm not going to any parties unless you're getting me in.
I'm going to all the parties. So
great, thank you.
You can be my date. It'll be fun.
Awesome. Can Katie come?
Yeah. We'll see.
All right. Fair enough.
If she's nice to me. But yeah. Right. So please let us know. Hit us on Twitter or by email or carrier pigeon. I don't care. Tell us where you're going to be, when we can hang out. Whether you gotta want to get a selfie, an autograph, just come say hi. Like, any of that stuff is awesome, and we'd love to actually meet the people who listen to the show every week.
Definitely. I agree. I echo that. Jimmy, what's up?
Thank you to Twitch for allowing me to present at TwitchCon, and yep. John for coming with me and hanging out and presenting on the panel as well. But also thank you to everyone who supported me, friends and family, either in person or watching online. I really appreciate it. All the feedback was really good on it. And also, everyone in the Heroes community really, doing a great job supporting, my content that I put out this week on the new Heroes Brawl mode. So thank you guys so much. It's been probably one of my most successful articles/videos that I've done to date. So thank you guys so much for that. It makes me happy to see be able to share that with the community.
Definitely. Woo! Well, as for me, Jimmy, thank you for inviting me onto your panel. I hope that I added many good things to it. But that was a blast. So much fun this last week. So you can find the VODs. I believe it's twitch.tv/TwitchConSandstorm. There's a bunch of VODs there, and look for the one that says podcasting on Twitch, growing your Hearthstone community or your podcast community, not your Hearthstone. I'm really good at words. Oh my god. But yeah, that was a blast, and a big thank you to Twitch for allowing us to do that panel. Yeah. Other than that, I'm streaming more at twitch.tv/kicktripod, so you should check that out. And cool. Well, let's go ahead. We need to get out of here because it has been a day and a half. I can't even find my buttons anymore. That's how good at this I am. So you can find more Overwatch stuff throughout the week at overwatch.blizzbro.com. A big thank you to Jake Buttonneau at jakebuttonneau.ca for her music. And a big thank you to my little bro, Nathan Horstman, for our sweet new logo and Streamworks and all that kind of stuff. I think we look really, really, really sexy. So big thank you to him for that. And find us on Twitter at Payload Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/payload podcast, on patreon.com/payload podcast. Email us just to switch things up, thepayload@blizzbro.com. We love your iTunes reviews. Find us on all the iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, and Google Podcasts. This has been episode number 42. It has been wonderful. Wonderful to be back with all of you. I'm happy the studio's working. We only had minor hiccups. So thank you guys so much. And to our podcast listeners, I promise we won't miss another week until BlizzCon. So there's always that. And boom. All right, we're out of here. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you next week.
The Payload is a production of BlizzPro. Find out more about Overwatch at overwatch.blizzpro.com. You can find your host throughout the week on social media. Find Jimmy on Twitter at DJ Tyrant, Kevin on Twitter at Lack of Realism, and John on Twitter at Kicked Tripod.